So tonight, in our first shiur on Hilchos Tisha B'Av, we're going to discuss the mourning practices of Tisha B'Av, the laws of Avelus that apply to Tisha B'Av. The first question we need to ask ourselves is what laws of mourning, what practices of mourning apply to Tisha B'Av? Thank you also to Dani Charlap and the Charlap family for sponsoring their very generous sponsorship this series. We very much appreciate it, Dani. It's always good to have you here. So the Gemara in Tainis, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, in source number one, says Tanu Rabbanan, the Braisa says, Kol mitzvos hanoagos ba'avel noagos b'tisha b'av. All of the obligations that apply to an avel apply to Tisha B'Av as well. What are the examples? Asur be'achilu v'shesia, uv'sicha, uv'n ilas asandol v'tash m'shamita. So the on Tisha B'Av, you can't do any of those. Those are the inuyim, those are the five afflictions, eating, drinking, anointing, wearing leather shoes, and tashm shamita, marital relations. And in addition to that, va'aser likros b'Torah b'nevim u'viksuvim, you can't learn Torah, v'lishnos b'mishnah b'talmud v'medrash u'v'alachos v'agados, you can't learn any Torah. We'll see the exceptions to that. So far, what we have from the Braisa says, kol mitzvos hanogos ba'avel hanogos b'tisha b'av. Anything that applies to a mourner applies on Tisha B'Av. The only problem is that when we take a look at an earlier Gemara in Maseches Tainis, it seems to be that this is not really the case. It's not really true. Why not? Well, says the Mishnah, in Tainis Chavav Amidbeis, Rabbi Yehuda mechayiv bekfias hamita velo hodu lo chachamin. The Rabbi Yehuda said that on Tisha B'Av, one is obligated to turn over his beds in his house. And the chachamim did not agree. What is this turning over the beds? Kfias hamita? Anybody ever hear of kfias hamita? So it's not your fault if you haven't heard about it, because we don't practice it anymore. However, it used to be that during Avelus, a mourner would turn over his bed as an expression of Avelus. They used to have beds where you could sleep on it normally, faced up, or you could also sleep on it in the opposite direction. Our beds are just not the same. And we're also concerned that it might look like sorcery or something strange, so therefore we don't do it anymore, we cut it out. However, it used to be that kfiyas hamita, turning over the beds, was part of the practices of mourning, just like sitting low to the ground, just like not wearing leather shoes, so too kfiyas hamita. The chachamim say that kfiyas hamita, even though it applies to avelus, it doesn't apply to Tisha B'Av. So I don't understand. I quoted you the first source that said, kol mitzvos hanogos ba'av hanogos b'tisha b'av. Everything that applies to the mourner applies to Tisha B'Av. Now you tell me that kfiyas hamita does it? So what's going on here? So the Rosh explains the distinction. Source number three, the Rosh says, "Ve'af ha'pi shehin mitzvos hanogos ba'avel, even though kfiyas hamita," and he adds in another one, "atifas harosh." What's atifas harosh? So he used to have the practice to cover the face all the way down to the lips when one was in avel. So atifas harosh is covering the face. So the Rosh says that even though those are mitzvos that apply to an avel, visanya, we learned, kol mitzvos hanogos ba'avel hanogos b'tisha b'av, anything that applies to the avel applies to tisha b'av as well. This is the key line, hahi le'inyan mitzvos lo sa'aseh hanogos ba'avel tanya. What are the things that apply to tisha b'av if they apply to a mourner? Only if they're negative commandments. If it's an isur, if it's something that a mourner is not allowed to do, so then you can't do it on tisha b'av. When a mourner has a positive commandment and something that he or she is obligated to do as a positive, that does not apply to Tisha B'Av. So we have a split. This is the first thing we need to know. What parts of Avelus apply to Tisha B'Av? Negatives apply, positives do not apply. What's the svara behind that? Why would we draw the line? Why would we distinguish between positives and negatives? So I want to share two possible approaches with you as a hakdama, as an introduction to our study of the laws of Tisha B'Av. The first one, I saw in the Sefer Harei Kedem from Rav Michal Shurkin, the Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, a popular Sefer that he wrote, writing up a number of the pieces of Rav Soloveitchik on Inyanei Moedim. So he quotes over there a possibility based on the riff in source number four, that maybe the mourning of Tisha B'Av is not exactly the same as the mourning of a close relative. We know that when it comes to the mourning of a close relative, we have multiple stages in the process of mourning. What does it start out with? What's the first stage? Owning, very good. So owning, or what we colloquially call in the Gemara in Brachos, Misha Meso Muta Lefanov, if the relative has not yet been buried, and it's incumbent upon the living relatives to bury the mace, so that's Meso Muta Lefanov. And in that case, so a person doesn't do any mitzvos, so therefore he's not obligated in the positives of Avelus. However, he is still forbidden to do the negatives of the Avelus. Then in the next stage, after the deceased is buried, so then Shiva begins and you have what we colloquially call Avelus. So you have Aninos and then Avelus. How does that translate into Tisha B'Av? So there is a discussion in the Rishonim as to what stage of Tisha B'Av is considered the Aninos and what stage is considered the Avelus. I don't want to get too much into that. But the Rif in source number 4 compares the mourning practices of Tisha B'Av to Aninos, to the earliest stage, where you just experience the death. It's supposed to feel like a very sudden experience, something that's very heart-wrenching. So if it's true that the mourning practices of Tisha B'Av are like Aninos, so then we can understand the distinction of the Rosh. Then I can understand why the negatives apply, but the positives don't. The positives don't, because we said positives don't apply during Aninos. However, negatives do, and therefore the negatives apply on Tisha B'Av as well. That's one possible approach. Yeah, Joseph. Like you're not allowed to do any other positive mitzvos.
Right, exactly. How is it?
Yeah, so it seems to be that there's a mix of Aninos and Avelos going on in Tisha B'Av. That's what it seems to be. Tzarech Iyun, as to exactly which of the halachos follow the Aninos shlav stage and which ones follow the Avelus, it requires a little bit more thinking for that. I'll leave that as food for thought going forward. Okay, so that's one possible approach. Second possible approach, is to distinguish between two different forms of Avelus. This is key to understand in order to have a deep experience of Tisha B'Av. We have in halacha what we call Avelus Yeshana and Avelus Chadasha. A mourning of old and a mourning of new. And you could probably gather what those phrases mean. Avelus Chadasha is where, unfortunately, a person undergoes a death in his family. And then he has a mourning. He has a mourning period as a response to that death. That's Avelus Chadasha. Avelus Yeshana, in contrast, is an Avelus of old, meaning we're mourning the Churban that took place thousands of years ago. So it's not like this just happened. It happened a long time ago, but nonetheless, the mourning continues. And Rav Soloveitchik, in a couple of places, and this is written up in some of his English essays in the book Out of the Whirlwind, which was some of Rav Soloveitchik's essays, he distinguishes between the nature of Avelus Yeshana and Avelus Chadasha. And he writes in source number 5, with regard to historical mourning, Avelus Yeshana, Jews can observe Avelus. You can do Avelus. You can do mourning. They can engage in Nihug Avelus. You can do the practices of mourning and comply with its laws. But they are not Avelim with respect to their Gavra, to their personhood. The Rav has a dichotomy in the laws of mourning between the status of the person and the actions that the person takes. And he says that there are two elements of mourning. There is the actions, what we call the nihuge avelos, the observances. And in addition to that, there is the person. There is what we call the gavra avel, the fact that the person now has a status during this time as an avel. Before you weren't an avel, later you won't be an avel. Right now you have a unique status in halacha because of your life circumstances. The Rav says that when it comes to Avelus Yeshana, historical mourning, we can't possibly attain the status of a real mourner because we didn't experience the loss in the here and now. We can do the mourning practices, that we can do, but we can't have that status. And I was thinking that perhaps along those lines, you could explain the distinction of the Rosh. After all, what's the difference between positives and negatives when it comes to mourning? So you could easily make the argument that the negatives are things that you refrain from because they're going to take away from your connection to the mourning, right? But what's the deal with the positives? Why do you have to do the positives? So it could be that there are some positives that are obligatory because Chazal are trying to, awaken within us. They're trying to almost, you know, stir feelings of mourning with us. That's possible. But another possibility could be that the positives are an expression of the status. Sometimes if you have a status in halacha, you do something that reflects that status. You want to show, you want to illustrate that you're a gavra avel, so you go out of your way to do certain things. You not only refrain from certain things, you go out of your way to positively do certain things. Well, if on Tisha B'Av we can't be the gavra avel, then we don't have to do those positives. We still have to stay away from the negatives because we're supposed to be in a mindset of mourning. We're supposed to feel as if we're mourning. So you can't do the negatives because that's going to detract. However, you don't have to do the positives because you can't be a gavra of it. Yeah.
So I'll give an example here. I'm trying to understand why we're talking about flipping your bed as a positive. So like we all sit on low chairs on Tisha B'Av. Is that a positive? We sit on low chairs, or is it the negative? We don't sit on regular chairs.
That you can't sit, right.
Wouldn't the bed be the same? You can't sleep on your regular bed. You have to sleep on the wrong side of the bed.
Right.
Like, it would seem that's no different than the chair.
Good. Okay. That's a good question. So let's come back to that when we do the chairs. We're going to do the chairs when we discuss the different stages of the day, the night, morning, and afternoon. And if I forget, then please remind me when we get to that point. But point well taken, which is that like any of the positives, you could spin as a negative, right? So it's we're kind of taking a stance on the nature of this halacha that it is positive in that there's a positive obligation to flip it, right? Like you're doing something to show the avelos. And that's actually the way that the Gemara describes it. It has a very interesting proof text for why we flip the beds. It's, you know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in a certain Tselem Elokim, and that when we experience a stage of mourning, it's like a compromising of our humanity, so to speak, and we flip the beds in order to demonstrate that. So it's like a positive demonstration. Yeah.
Isn't it, can you also just, rather than positive and negative, more like a Sheva Al Pasa kind of thing, all the things that we're not doing, we're just like, we're not wearing shoes,
Good. Okay. So Ariel makes another good point. Sometimes we use the phrases mitzvah sase and mitzvah lo sase, positive and negative, but all that we really refer to is the mode of action. We don't refer to obligation versus prohibition, but rather obligation just means that you're active, you're doing something, and lo sase, negative, means that you are refraining. So that's also a good possibility. And that's an interesting debate, actually, in the Achronim as to... when it comes to aninos, when we say that an onin can't do any prohibitions, right? But he also doesn't do positives. What about a positive that's a sheva al tase, right? So is he allowed to do that or not? That's a question. So you're hitting on a good point. I'm saying that mitzvah sase sometimes in this context can mean active, and mitzvah lo sase can mean inactive. Okay, so that's all by means of introduction as to what applies and what does not apply. So now let's discuss more halacha lemaisa, three different mourning practices. We have Torah study, we have greetings, and we have work. Those are the three that we're going to discuss tonight. Thank you, Avi, you're doing a great job. Okay, so let's begin with Talmud Torah. We saw in the Gemara, in source number one, Maseches Tainis, that one is not allowed to study any Torah on Tisha B'Av. However, the Gemara mentions exceptions, v'korei b'kinos, b'iov, u'bidvarim harayim shebi'irmiyah. One is allowed to study the kinos, he's allowed to read Iov, he's allowed to read the prakim, the tragic prakim of Yirmiyah. So we see an exception, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins this in source number 7, Tavkuf Nundalit, Se'if Aleph and Beis. The Shulchan Aruch says that one is not allowed to study any Torah on Tisha B'Av. Why? What's the source? Mishum shenemar pikudei Hashem yesharim misamchei lev. Because Torah is considered something that makes us rejoice. However, one is allowed to study dvarim haraim, things that make one feel sad. Umoter lilmod medrash eicha uperek ilu megalchin. Perek ilu megalchin is the third perek of Moed Katan that discusses the laws of Avelos. V'chein lilmod perush eicha uperush iov. One is allowed to study all of these more saddening texts. So there is an interesting question as to the nature of the prohibition to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av. in contrast to the nature for an Avel to learn Torah. An Avel is also not allowed to learn Torah. However, we derive that from a different pasuk. From a different pasuk in Sefer Yechezkel, Hey Onik Dom, should sigh out with silence. And from there, we learn two things about the Avel. Number one, he's not allowed to learn Torah. And number two, he's not allowed to greet other people. What's the common denominator between the two? Exactly what the pasuk sounds like, that the Avel is supposed to be withdrawn, right? So you're supposed to be almost to yourself, and therefore that prohibits you from engaging in Talmud Torah, and also, your mouth is supposed to be closed, so to speak. So you're not supposed to engage in Talmud Torah, you're also not supposed to give greetings. So let's discuss both of those. When it comes to Tisha B'Av, the nature of the prohibition to learn seems to be of a different ilk. Because we don't learn this from He'anik Dom. What do we learn it from? Misamchei Lev. The fact that the Torah is going to make you happy. The point on Tisha B'Av is that we want to be sad. Tisha B'Av is a day of crying. We're supposed to be sad. It's a day of Bechi. So therefore, you can't do something that's going to put you in a more joyous state. So I'll give you one possible nafkamina. Are you allowed to learn the Dvarim Haraim on Tisha B'Av, and are you allowed to learn them during Avilus? This was a debate in the Baliat Tosos. And one of the opinions in Tosos says we have to distinguish. When it comes to Avilus, you're not allowed to study Eicha, or the third parak of Moed Katan. But when it comes to Tisha B'Av, you can. What's the difference? Well, when it comes to Avilus, the point is that you're supposed to be silent. So it doesn't really matter what you're learning, you should be silent. But when it comes to Tisha B'Av, the point is not to be happy. So if the things that you're learning are not going to make you happy, then it's fine. And that would be the difference between the two. Another possible distinction between the two, can you learn without speaking? Can you learn just in your head? Can you think about learning? So if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, page number 2, I have this over here. Shulchan Aruch says that one is not allowed to be mahar her bedivrei Torah. Take a look at Mishnah Brura, source number 12, Al Yedei Hirur. After Hirur lav kedibor dami, even though thinking is not like speech, shiny hacha de'ikar taima mishum simcha. Uvehirur ika simcha. Since when you're thinking about the words, you're going to be joyous, so therefore you're not allowed to think about the words. Okay. So at the end of the day, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we're not allowed to learn Torah. We are allowed to learn the Dvarim Haraim of Torah. What exactly is included in the Dvarim Haraim? Eicha, third parak of Moed Katan, Eov, tragic prakim of Yirmiyahu, or we add a couple of others. You can learn the Agadata of the Churban in Maseches Gittin. That's a very popular thing to learn on Tisha B'Av. All of those things you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. For the things that you're not allowed to learn, one should not think about them either. Now, for the things that you are allowed to learn, how deeply can you go into them? Can we have like a Monday night style shiur where we really go, you know, we go all out? Obviously, we're not going to have the doggies. Fine. But maybe we can't have the Monday night shiur without the doggies. So, okay, end of story. But let's say we could. So how deeply can you go into the material? So if you take a look at source number 9, so there are some who say, or actually before that, the Mishnah Brura in source number 12, he says, "Umehai taima asur lilmod ezedrush okasha oterutz afilu bidvarim araim mipnei shesimcha hilo." You shouldn't go too much into it. Don't think about the questions and the answers and all of the back and forth. And he quotes earlier from the Taz that you shouldn't learn bepilpul, you shouldn't learn by twisting and turning, rather shal yilmod bepshutan shal dvarim. When you're going to learn the dvarim araim, you learn them simply. So the pashup shat, the simple interpretation of the Mishnah Brura, is that one should learn them simply because we're worried that if you go too in-depth, that's going to bring you joy. You're going to get a chiddush, you're going to have an aha moment, and that's going to be totally counterproductive to what you're supposed to be learning on Tisha B'Av. However, there were others who were more comfortable with learning bi'iyun, and especially Rab Chaim Soloveitchik in source number 10, Rab Chaim is quoted as saying that you should learn bi'iyun. Why? Well, when we say that you're allowed to learn the Dvarim Haraim, why are you really allowed to learn those parts of Torah? Is it because they're going to make you sad? That's probably what the Mishnah Brura is saying. It's going to make you sad to learn about the Churban. If you learn too much, you go all into it, so then you're going to start to get the joy of Talmud Torah. But if you just learn the Pshuton Shel Dvarim, so then you're going to be sad. And that's why it's fine. Rav Chaim had a different way of looking at the permission to learn Dvarim Haraim. Rav Chaim said that by learning the Dvarim Haraim, you're actually fulfilling a positive fulfillment in the day of Tisha B'Av. The day of Tisha B'Av is supposed to be one where we mourn, where we reflect, where we cry. Part of that is to learn all about the Churban, all about the tragic moments of our history. So for Rav Chaim, it's actually the opposite is true. The more that you go into it, the better your Kiyum is, because the better of an understanding you have of these Dvarim Haraim. So at the end of the day, we have a machlokas in the Achronim, a debate, whether one is allowed to study bi'iyun, the Dvarim Haraim. I think the more widespread practice is to leave it at the more simple interpretations of the text. You're certainly allowed to learn it with a peirush so that you actually understand what you're learning. But to get so into it that you're going to get, you're going to get some joy from it, that should probably be refrained from. So that's in terms of what we're allowed to learn and how deeply we're allowed to learn it. Then there's one other issue when it comes to learning, which is what parts of davening. Yes, Tali.
I'm curious about in the Gemara it has the case of Torah, the Makom She'ena Ragil, the Makom She'ena Ragil, the Shanot.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be like picked up in the Shulchan.
Yeah, so that's so good question. It's because I cut the Gemara short and we have the next opinion disagrees. And we don't pass them like that first opinion. But yes, you're on the ball.
Okay. What is that? Okay.
What's the reason for it?
Yeah.
So the reason for it is that if you learn something new, the assumption is that it's going to take more stress. It's going to take more effort. And when you learn something new, you won't be as joyous. That's the svara behind it.
Is there a difference between learning until Chatzos versus afterwards?
Growing up,
no, there is no difference when it comes to Chatzos in terms of learning. We're going to do, that'll be part of the Chatzos shir. We'll debunk all of the myths about what changes at Chatzos and what doesn't. There are some things that change, some things that don't. Learning does not.
You're supposed to watch movies.
Movies after Chatzos.
They say
about the Rogachover that Nafsho Choshka Batoro. Nafshel Choshka Batorah, it's actually a din in Avelus. That if an Avel is on the level of Nafshel Choshka Batorah, then he could learn. I don't think anybody else held that he was Nafshel Choshka Batorah as much as the Ragat Shavir. Yeah.
I was thinking about
I'll tell you another story. You know what? Hold on.
What do they do at Tishba? You know what I mean?
Listen to this. This is wild. Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal. You know this story? No. Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal. So they say that it was so painful for him to go through Tisha B'Av without being able to learn seriously that right after Tisha B'Av, they found him not in the Chadar Ochel, but at his Makom in the Beis Medrash, learning, having a Seder before he even broke his fast because of how much he missed learning. What type of darga is that? Unbelievable, right? Okay. So yeah, Yosef, I'm with you. We could tap into that just a little bit. That's exactly what this is, right? Pikud Hashem Yesharim Misam Chelev. We actually quoted that. It's a throwback for anybody who remembers. We quoted it in our shiurim about Birchas HaTorah. Gleital says they are supposed to find joy in Torah. That's part of Torah Lishma. You're supposed to enjoy it. Pikud Hashem Yesharim Misam Chelev. It's hard to go without it. Okay.
Huh?
I like that. I like it. You still can't have the meat, but we'll do the sushi. Okay. Okay. The last part of Talmud Torah is what to do during davening. During davening, we have some sections where it seems like we're quoting psukim, right? So we do say psukim izimra. I'm Tisha B'Av. Where's psukim izimra from? Tehillim. How are you allowed to say Psukim Dezimra if it's from Tehillim? You're not allowed to learn Tehillim. So the answer is Seder Hayom. It's part of the organization of the day. You're not saying it Bitoras. You're not saying it qua learning. You're saying it as a fulfillment of something that you do during the day. Right. Tehillim. You're not allowed to learn Tehillim. To use Tehillim as davening, that you could do.
I'm saying, could you just say Tehillim?
Yeah, to say Shi'ala Malos is a way of
like people that go through the whole Talmud, like if they're able to just go through the Talmud, they're not learning it, they're just saying.
It's a good question. So I would imagine that it depends really what the purpose is. If the purpose is to daven, then I think it's fine. If the purpose is to learn, then I wouldn't. But I think most people who do that, they're doing it more as davening. That's my impression. Okay. So where do we draw the line over here? So take a look at source number 13. Umoter likros kol seder hayom u parshas hakorbanos u mishnas izu mekoman u medrash Rabbi Yishmael. There's a big tumult about what one says as part of Birkos HaShachar. Generally, we try to say at least the main parts of Korbanos, which are Parshas HaTamid, right? Tzavos B'nai Yisrael. And we also try to say the Mishnayos of Izahu Mekoman that review all of the different types of Korbanos that were offered in the Beis HaMikdash. And finally, we conclude with Rabbi Yishmael, the 13 Midos that we use to expound the Torah, right? And that's our Tanakh, Mishnah, and Gemara. So can we say those on Tisha B'Av, or is that considered like learning? So the Shulchan Aruch over here says that it's totally fine. However, the Mishnah Berurah says that if you're someone who doesn't generally say those during the year, then you should be careful not to say it on Tisha B'Av, because it appears as if you're trying to learn it on Tisha B'Av, right? Then but if you're someone who does say it the rest of the year, then you certainly could say it on Tisha B'Av. The Mishnah Berurah adds as well, the Shulchan Aruch says in source number 13, Umutar lachzor haparsha b'tisha b'av, you can review the parsha. Question is, what does that mean? So the Taz says that refers to Shnai Mikra ve'echa Targum. That if you do an aliyah a day, for example, there are people who do an aliyah a day. So if you do an aliyah a day, this is your kavua, your fixed day that you do this aliyah, Shnai Mikra, Taz says you can continue to do it. However, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that many Achronim are not happy with that, and he has a different interpretation based on the Magen Avram. Umoter lachzor haparsha means the Baal Korei can review the laning that he's going to do in shul on the day of Tisha B'Av. But not that you could do Shnai Mikra ve'echa Targum. So halacha psuka is that we avoid doing Shnai Mikra ve'echa Targum on Tisha B'Av. Yeah, hi.
Why would that even be a shaila in the first place? Is that not, again, like...
You could consider it more of as like Seder Hayom.
I guess also...
There's shailas about Daf Yomi during Avilas. Oh, right?
I was going to say Seder Hayom.
There should we could... Right, you could...
I was going to say I'll Seder Hayom.
Oh, what were you going to say?
I know the Gemara listed very specific things to learn, but yeah. I thought just in general, like negative... Like, for example, Hilchos of Tisha B'Av. Can you learn
right.
Hilchos of Tisha B'Av?
Oh, so you want to say you can prepare the leaning because the second aliyah of Oes Chanon is... Okay, I hear. But it's not all... First of all, it's not all Shlach HaMaisah. It kind of gives you a nechama at the end. And then also you have Vayichal, where you have the Yud Gimel Midos, and... right? You lean Vayichal at Minchah. Okay. The last point when it comes to Talmud Torah that I wanted to discuss was learning Sifrei Musar. Are you allowed to learn Sifrei Musar? So if you look at source number 9, I quoted you from the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah. I photocopied it over here. I actually scanned it this time. I went fancier than Shavuos night. Used the scanner instead of the camera. Gotta give me props for that. Okay. So Rav Eliashiv says that you can learn Sifrei Musar, but you should be careful not to delve into the psukim or the ma'amari chazal that are quoted over there. So, and there are some who are more machmir. I would say that if you have other things to learn, then better to learn the other things, better to learn Iyov, better to learn Eicha. There's so much to learn. So better to hold off on the Sifrei Musar for other days. Although some say that the Musar is good also, because the whole point of a Tainus is that you want to do tshuva, right? So if you learn the Musar in order to awaken you to do tshuva, I would assume that would be fine. But to learn the Musar safer just because you have a limud in Mesilas Yesharim, that we probably would not do. Okay? All right, so that wraps up the halachos of learning Torah. That's the first of the mourning practices that we carry over from a mourner to Tisha B'Av. The next one is greetings. And here we want to debunk some of the myths and also, you know, see what we really say about which greetings are mutter and which are not. So where does this come from to begin with? We're on page number 3, source number 16. The Rosh quotes from a Tosefta. Ein she'ila shalom l'chaverim b'tisha b'av. One is not allowed to greet his friends with shalom on Tisha B'Av. Avol mishivin es ha-hedyotos l'chaverim, probably means Tamad Chacham. Avol mishivin es ha-hedyotos b'safa rafa. If someone who doesn't know any better greets you, so then you greet them softly in return. But you don't, you know, go out of your way to, you know, greet them all excitedly. Now, this is another carryover from Avilus to Tisha B'Av. We said about an Avel that one does not engage in greetings when he is an Avel. The Shulchan Aruch paskins this in source number 17. Ein she'ila shalom l'chaveru b'Tisha B'Av. V'hejyoto she'inam yodim v'nostim shalom. If someone doesn't know any better and he greets you, so then meshivim lahem b'safa rafa u'v'choved rosh. You should return the greeting with a soft voice and with a certain heaviness, a certain seriousness to you. And the Mishnah Brura adds that it's if you can, you know, you say, I'm not giving you the best greeting today, even though, you know, I really like you a lot. I'm not giving you the best greeting because I'm not allowed to today. So that way you avoid, you know, instilling any ill feelings. Now, what's included in She'ila Shalom? That's the key question. Okay, so the Mishnah Brura says in 18, V'hu adin lomar tzafra tava nami aser. Mishnah Brura says that one should avoid saying good morning on Tisha B'Av because good morning is basically the way that we greet each other nowadays. And he adds, V'hu adin l'shloach doron l'chaveru b'Tisha B'Av aser. It would also be forbidden to send a gift on Tisha B'Av because that's also considered a type of greeting. So are there any, what's not considered a greeting? Or is there anything that you're allowed to say? So take a look at Rav Shlomo Zalman. Actually, jump down. What were you saying?
Can you wave?
Good. So says the Ritva in source number 19, that one would be allowed to nod his head. I assume waving should be the same as nodding your head, because that's not considered an actual greeting. That is like it's a gesture.
It's an acknowledgement.
So my question here, when you go to a Beis Avel,
yeah.
So you just, at least what I think, maybe wrong, when you walk in, you're not supposed to say anything to the Avel, the Avel's supposed to greet you. So
right.
If you're on a Beis, how do we even wave or head nod?
Yeah, so I think what you're referring to with the Nichum Avelim is that the Avel's supposed to start the speaking, right? But in terms of the greetings, you're really not supposed to greet each other at all. Like, he's not supposed to say, you know, hey, Avi, how are you doing? Right? He's just supposed to start talking. And then once he starts talking, then you respond.
You can acknowledge presence.
Right. That's what we're saying. So the Ritva in source number 19, he learns from a Gemara. We don't have the time to get into it right now. But he learns from a Gemara Moi Kotin Chav Zayin Amid Beis that is perfectly permitted to gesture, to nod your head. And I would assume that waving would be the same.
On Tisha B'Av, we just start talking. Don't say good morning, just start.
Right. Talking. Yeah, exactly. Get right into it. So there is a question about, what about like, how are you? You know? So this is great, because the post can basically distinguish between, what do you really mean when you say, how are you? Right? So if you say, how are you, because you really want to know how the person is doing, so that you shouldn't do on Tisha B'Av. But if you say, how are you, because, oh, that's just the way, you know, that's just etiquette. Right, it's just like it's just a beginning of a conversation. Oh, how you doing? Oh, you know, I don't really care.
People never so, how they do it, they just say hi. Like, you don't really
they don't wait for the answer.
Right. Exactly. So you don't wait for the answer. Right. Yeah. So in Halichos Shlomo in source number 20 over here, he says that L'inyan amira shalom la'avel shimihi l'shem nimus greida. If it's just for etiquette, kinahug ha'imna ve'ino miskavin the bracha, you're not really trying to like wish him well. So then shari. V'yash la'ayin b'chi agavna l'inyan Tisha B'Av. So it's possible that that would be permitted. Again, probably try to avoid saying how are you to each other. But at the end of the day, if it's just etiquette, then it's, you know, not the end of the world. Okay. And a couple of other exceptions. So the Achronim over here in 21 and 22, Har Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, as well as the Geshar Rav Chaim, Rav Chaim Michal Tukachinsky, so they both say that you could say Mazel Tov to one another. Because Mazel Tov is like a bracha. You're not really wishing, you're not asking how the person is doing, you're not greeting the person. It's not a She'ila Shalom, it's more of a bracha, and that would be fine. And they say also along those lines, you could say a refuah shlema if you really mean it as like a tefillah, like a refuah shlema for the person. So then you could say it. If you just mean it as a nice way of interacting with another person, then probably better to refrain. The whole point over here, the she'ila shalom, as we said from the avel he'anig dom, the whole point is that we're during our avilos we are more withdrawn. So we should feel the pain of not being able to say, hi, how are you, good morning, to a friend, or to someone who's walking in after us. We should feel that pain. That's part of the experience of Tisha B'Av. It's not a lack of etiquette. It's more that's a way of really tapping in to what the day is supposed to be. Okay, so that's the second of the practices of mourning. And the third one is work. So work is a complex, a knotty issue on Tisha B'Av in terms of how it plays out halacha l'maisa in practice. So the background to this is a Gemara in Pesachim that says that whether one is allowed to do work on Tisha B'Av all depends on minhag hamakom. It all depends on the custom of the place where you live. If you live in a place that is accustomed to doing work on Tisha B'Av, then you can go along and do the work. But if you're in a place that doesn't do work on Tisha B'Av, then you should refrain. So the Rishonim and the Achronim say that nowadays all of our communities are considered places where our custom is not to do work on Tisha B'Av. So says the Beis Yosef in source number 24, and the Bir Halacha says that as well. Turn to page number 4. What type of work are we talking about, and until when are we talking about not doing work? Those are the key questions that we need to answer. So take a look at 25. This is from the Darkei Moshe. The Rama, his commentary on the Torah, quoting from the Trumas Hadeshen, Kosav b'Trumas Hadeshen, Tzimin Kufnun Gimel. Kol melacha, bein shel Torah, bein she'ena shel Torah, whether it is takes a lot of labor or not. Afilu im himaleches hejot, even if it's something that a layman could do. Im yesh ba shihui kitzas, if it takes some time, if there's some delay that it takes, shemishtaheba, that you're going to be delayed while doing it, you're going to be involved while doing it, ein la'asosa b'tishbav, that you shouldn't do, mipnei she'al yedei kach misbatel me'inoi, because when you get involved in that drawn-out process of the malacha, what's going to happen? What are you going to forget about? You're going to forget about the avilus. You're going to forget it's Tisha B'Av. You're going to be so involved in the malacha that you did. So what are some things that are not drawn-out processes? Hadlakas neros, you can light a match. Kishira, you can tie a knot. Even though those are malachos on Shabbos, but that's not what we're talking about on Tisha B'Av. When we say malacha on Tisha B'Av, we look at malacha in terms of what's going to take you away from what you're supposed to be thinking about. So if it's a drawn-out process, then don't do it. So that's why the Achronim add a bunch of things here. Many poskim say not to wash the dishes, at least on the morning. Before I get into the examples, let's look at source number 26. V'lo nohagu b'isur malacha ki im ad chatzos. The Rama says that this prohibition applies only until midday. So Tani, that is something that would change at midday. The Isser Malacha of anything that is a drawn-out process applies in the morning, but not into the afternoon. So in the morning of Tisha B'Av, what should we refrain from doing? So many of the poskim say you shouldn't tidy up the house and clean and wash the dishes and all these types of things that are going to take you, they're going to involve you, even though it's not like, it's not a meleches uman. It doesn't take an expert to wash the dishes. You can ask me, I'm not an expert and I do it anyway, right? So it doesn't take an expert to wash the dishes, but nonetheless, because it's time, because it's going to be a process. So for that, you shouldn't do it. You should refrain from doing that on the morning of Tisha B'Av. In the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, you could wash the dishes. And when we get into washing, we'll talk about exactly how to go about that. But at least in the morning of Tisha B'Av, you should refrain from such malachos. Why is this? So as we said, source number 28, Mishnah Berurah, Kidei shelo yasichu daita me'avilus. You don't want to forget about what's going on. Good. So now, good. So it seems that the most intense period of mourning is in the morning. Actually, that leads to the Aruch HaShulchan in source 29. Just for Tisha B'Av. Take a look in source number 29. So Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein in the Aruch HaShulchan writes as follows: Uvimedina senu haminagar chatzos hayom shlo lasos malacha. Our custom is not to do any of these malachos until noon. The truth is, The Aruch HaShulchan says that the real end time, the real cap for this minog, is until we say kinos. When you finish with kinos, then you can transition into the second half. So Tani, that's exactly the point, right? The kinos is supposed to be the most intense period of Bechi. That's when you should be focusing only, solely, on that feeling. The best thing to do is to say kinos all the way until chatzos. Many shuls are just not able to do that. But we do, you know, we do advise, even if we're going to finish the kinos early, you know, certainly the halachos that apply until chatzos still apply. So then the Aruch HaShulchan says that at least when it comes to malacha, if someone really needs his livelihood, so he can't wait until noon. So if you have someone who's in a really pressing situation, he needs to do his work for his livelihood. If he doesn't do that work, it's really going to cost him. So then, okay, if after kinos finished, but it's before chatzos, the Aruch HaShulchan is willing to be lenient. However, he says that the more proper thing to do, again, is to wait until chatzos in order to do any of this work. So now, once chatzos hits, is it a free-for-all? You can do whatever you want? Or is there still a limit on what you can do? So take a look in the Shulchan Aruch, source number 32, very harsh words that the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara in Tainis. Anybody who does a malacha on Tisha B'Av, you don't see any good that comes from that malacha. So hold on a second. Didn't you just tell me that the Isser malacha is all dependent on minog? And that if you don't have the custom, then you could do malacha? And even those who do have the custom, they only don't do malacha until chatzos? So why are you telling me that you don't see any simin bracha? So take a look in 33, the Mishnah Berurah. Even for us, we don't do malacha until after chatzos. Nonetheless, umashma begemara davka kishekuveya atzmo lemalacha umesiach daito meho avilos. If you establish yourself in a fixed way to do work after chatzos, that's what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. Eino roa simin bracha. It's not going to be good. There's nothing productive that's going to come from it. Even though it is permitted to be engaged in business dealings after chatzos, lo yimshoch ba'asakav kedei shelo yasiach daito min ha'avilus. You shouldn't be overly involved, so much so that you would forget entirely about the avilus. So what we have here is a hierarchy. When it comes to the nighttime and the morning of Tisha B'Av, we don't do any malacha. Even the lightest malachos, like washing the dishes, you're not going to do on the morning of Tisha B'Av, because that's the most intense period of mourning, and we have a very high standard for what is considered to detract from our focus on the morning. When the afternoon hits, we lessen our standard a bit, but we don't annihilate it. Rather, what do we say? So we say that if you can be engaged in malachos, but the malachos shouldn't be so much so that you're going to be heavily involved in them that you'll forget about the day entirely. So that's the distinction that we try. That's the needle that we're threading over here. That's the line that we're walking in terms of chatzos. One last thing for what? And then the movies. Yeah. So okay. Yeah. So you know the best thing. It's hard. Tisha B'Av's a hard day, right? It's best to focus on things that are at least within the spirit of the day. You know, that's all I'll say for now. Okay. Now, one other thing that came to me today. I asked one of my rabbim. I haven't heard back yet. But the Shulchan Aruch says that one is allowed to do amir la'akum. You could have a non-Jew do malacha on your behalf on Tisha B'Av. However, it shouldn't be something that is very public. So, for example, you shouldn't have a non-Jew come over to your house to paint the house and to do construction on the house on Tisha B'Av. That we try to avoid. Av Shamilsa, the public nature of it, is something that we don't want to do.
Can they make calls on your behalf on Tisha B'Av?
Yeah, that would be fine.
Even before Chatzos,
if they're doing it, then you're not involved.
They shouldn't have a
Hesachdas. Right, exactly. Exactly. I think it would be fine for them to make calls on your behalf, even in the morning.
Even
yeah.
In a Jewish company?
In a Jewish company where the person making the calls is Jewish?
No,
No.
The person making the call is not Jewish.
Like being really close.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem to for the non-Jew to be doing work on behalf of the Jewish company. Meaning, there's no problem for the Jew to profit on Tisha B'Av. The Isser is not to profit. The Isser is to be involved in the work. Right?
B&H is always closed on Tisha B'Av, but during COVID when we were so busy, they allowed everyone to work after Chatzos.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't let the non-Jews work before Chatzos.
And after Chatzos, they allowed the Jews to work too?
Yeah.
Okay. So I would think that it would be fine for a non-Jew to be working on behalf of a Jewish company. It's, you know, lefi aniyus da'ati. Be from what we're seeing, right? Now, this idea that a non-Jew shouldn't do something that's public in nature, so where do you draw the line? So I actually had a question. Our landscaper comes on Thursdays. Tisha B'Av this year is on Thursday. Can, what's his name again? Barry? Can Barry mow the lawn? Or can Barry's guys, is Barry Jewish? Barry's Jewish.
Barry gross.
But he knows, if you tell him, he won't deal.
He won't come.
What if I don't tell, but you tell him?
Then I'm gonna cause the... Uh-oh, man. I've got myself in trouble today. Okay, but can Barry's guys, can they mow the lawn? So I was thinking, I don't know. Is the Avsha Milsa, is it that like... I don't know, where do you draw the line? Is it like construction work that's making a lot of noise and mowing the lawn also makes a lot of noise? It's
But they come every single week, right?
You contract them to work every week, right? So it is a kablanus.
He may not be doing it officially. I mean, they're doing it for him, but he's hiring them as outside contractors.
Right.
He's got his name on it.
But we still, but even without the Jewish part, even if it was owned by a non-Jew, right? The point is that if it's Av Shamilsa, if it's something that's very public, so then it might be something that we should avoid. So that was a shayla that I had. I'll leave you off with that. Lee Nedder, I'll put it on the group when I feel comfortable answering it. But that's just what I was thinking of when I got to that last part. Okay. So tonight what we saw was Avilus Hashanah versus Avilus Chadasha. We started off with what are the mourning practices of Tisha B'Av, the positives versus the negatives. We explained why only the negatives, not the positives. And then we went into three of the negatives: not learning Torah, not greeting people, not working. We discussed in terms of not learning Torah, what am I allowed to learn, what am I not allowed to learn, within what I'm allowed to learn, how deeply am I allowed to learn it. And then we discussed within greetings, what are the greetings I'm allowed to do, what am I not allowed to do, what about non-greeting greetings, what about gestures. We discussed all of that. And then when it comes to work, so we also discussed the different stages, the hierarchy of work at night in the morning versus work in the afternoon, the different types of malacha that would be prohibited in the first stage and in the second stage. And we ended off with a discussion about non-Jews doing malacha on our behalf. Next week, Be'ezras Hashem, we will discuss the five afflictions of Tisha B'Av. So not the morning practices, but eating, drinking, leather shoes, rechitza, washing, and marital relations. We'll see how much we can get to in 1 hour. Okay, Yashar Koach.